What the If is brought to you by listeners like you, thanks to our Patreon members, patreon.com/whattheif. Go there now and find out how you can become a member and get all kinds of cool rewards. And thank you for supporting our mission for science education and science fun.
Welcome
to What
the
If. I won't attempt it. Just imagine it. That is a small tease of our upcoming thought experiment, our if for the week. It involves screaming. Stay tuned to find out why. With us, we are missing our co-pilot, Matt. We are Matt-less this week. But with us is almost Dr. Gabby Panicia from Rockefeller University, less than a week away?
Yeah, officially less than a week away.
Officially less than a week away. Very
excited. Nervous.
From your PhD.
If I could scream loud enough to break the sound barrier, I absolutely would. I feel like that would fix me. And so I feel like what we're talking about today is very appropriate because I wish I could do that. And like I said, I think it would fix me.
Have you imagined how it may feel to be a doctor, to have that title?
I suspect it's going to be basically the same, except I can really be pompous about it. Yeah. Like, I don't expect I'll rub it in, but I think let me back this up. I think the rampant potential for comedy is going to help me.
Yeah.
That, like, every single time something new happens in my life, it just winds up being fuel for another joke. Like, I milked when I got hit by that SUV for, like, weeks. So I really think I'll be able to make a meal of this.
Is there a special room or, you know, that you're going to be welcomed into or a secret club?
You know, I'll let you know if you get a PhD, Phil.
We can't talk about the secret club, I guess. It's, bummer.
Yeah, the first rule of secret club is you can't talk about the secret club.
Secret PhD club. I'm guessing there are many.
I'm sure. There are very also exciting. Like, what country is it? Is it Switzerland where you get a sword?
Oh,
or Sweden,
wow.
Or something like that? I feel like,
fantastic.
Yeah, you get a sword with your PhD. And to be perfectly honest, I feel like I should have done my PhD elsewhere, not because I didn't get a great education at Rockefeller, because dang it, I want the sword. Like, I don't get a cool sword when I get my doctorate. I just get a doctorate.
Yeah. That's very funny. Speaking of Sweden, we're going to go to the mailbag here real quick. Lars, our most devoted, most consistent mailbagger, letter writer, emailer, website contact clicker, contact button clicker, has written in, and thank you. This is the What the If players bringing us the What the If mailbag theme. Thank you, gentlemen. Not particularly Swedish music. I think we may need a theme for Lars. We may have to work on that. May have to involve, I don't know, what's that big horn that they blow on the side of mountains?
Yeah.
Lars, let us know, what would the theme for Sweden be? But Lars writes in, gentlemen, thank you for the mailbag there. Lars writes in, hello, Thinquanauts, as he calls us. And he includes all of you listeners as well. We're all Thinquanauts here. And he says, first off, welcome home, Bill. You'll remember that Bill, our friend from our longest time, perhaps correspondent from Winchester, Virginia, wrote in last week. And Lars says, welcome home, Bill. You have a lot of great episodes to catch up to. Bill had mentioned that he had about 2 or 3 months worth of What the If episodes to catch up with because he had been traveling, and therefore implying that he would catch up with him. And this is something astounding we have found among you listeners out there, that you are completists and you enjoy listening to all the episodes, which I find astounding, and we appreciate that. And so Lars says, Bill, you have a lot of episodes to catch up with. I almost wish I could do the same, so that I can once more enjoy listening to many, many episodes in a row. So he enjoys the catching up period. Lars comments on our most recent episodes about the Infinite Library, Gabby, that was a pretty spectacular episode. He says, Lars comments, infinite... Gabby, do you remember, you want to just tell people what, if they missed that episode, what was that? What was the Infinite Library?
The Infinite Library was an episode essentially where we imagined an infinite library in which every book that had ever or would ever be written existed, including any version of any book that could have ever existed.
Astounding. Yeah. If you thought the Jedi Library was large, this is even bigger.
Yeah, this got exponential real fast.
Yeah. Lars mentions infinite books, including mislabeled or misspelled ones, wouldn't change reality like Einstein's or Murphy's laws. In other words, he's saying just because there's a book that misstates the law doesn't change the fact that the law exists in its actual form. But it would make it impossible to know if E equals CG8 is the correct formula or not. Now, I don't know if this is a reference to some science fiction story I'm not familiar with. Do you know, Gabby?
Nope.
Gabby, is it? Yeah, E equals CG8. We don't, so Lars, let us know what that was.
Or is this a joke about MC squared? Like,
oh, I see what you mean. I see. What if they got it wrong and it's E equals CG8? Very good. See, that's why you're almost doctor.
It's actually just that. That's really all they test me on is my ability to understand jokes and science related puns, and then they give me a doctorate.
Yeah, that's, look, that takes a high level of intelligence. I'll tell you that. Yeah, and then Lars says, you know, and maybe Murphy is the luckiest guy on Earth instead of everything always going wrong for Murphy. But without being able to confirm what knowledge is correct, so what if we couldn't tell what was real and what wasn't? Mankind, says Lars, would fast descend into a very simple state of not knowing what is true and what is not. The only true knowledge would be the one that is passed down from whoever it was that discovered it. And I think even there, I don't know that we could trust, you know, there's a lot of people that claim they've discovered things and they pass those down. And Lars suggests he has some ideas for ifs, which we'll catch up with in the future. One of his was, he says, on the internet, there's an expression that on the internet, no one knows that you are a dog. So what if we change that? And what if on the internet, everyone knew who you were? That's a suggestion from Lars. We may run with that in the future. We may not. It goes into the giant pile. And by the way, we suggest you, listeners, if you have ideas, feel free to send them in. We will run with them. So that was from Lars. Now, we just got in hot out of the mailbag, this just came in, I believe, this morning or perhaps late last night, from Martin in Frankfurt, Germany. Martin writes in, just wanted to weigh in on the Infinite Library episode, clearly a popular one with our audience. Martin says, by sheer coincidence, I had looked at that topic for some internal company thing I'm doing. Martin, we really want to know what your company is doing, messing around with infinite libraries. But Martin says, I was interested in how big the library described in the short story. It's based on a short story by Borges. So Martin says, I was interested in how big the library described in that short story has to be. And the results surprised me a lot. Actually, we would need quite a lot of universes, a mind-bogglingly large number of universes, if my calculation is correct, as the exponents break Google Sheets. Google spreadsheet program can't even handle the size of numbers that Martin was generating as far as how big the library could be. Martin says, also, at least at the story's premise, the library is not infinitely large, as there is a distinct finite number of books in it. But based on my estimate, the distinction is somewhat moot. And then he provides us with a little chain of thought here. He shows his work as he goes through some calculations, and it's quite fascinating. If I can, I will post these in the show notes. But basically, here's some quick calculations he gives us. So the Library of Babel, as Borges called it, and here's some quotes from the book. The universe, which the others call the library, is composed of an indefinite, perhaps infinite number of hexagonal galleries. And the arrangement of the galleries is always the same. 20 bookshelves, 5 to a side, line 4 of the hexagon 6 size. Each bookshelf holds 32 books in identical format. So I mentioned that all that just to say that the story really gives a lot of interesting statistics for you to begin to calculate things. So the number of books per room in the Library of Babel is 640. At the bottom of this long calculation, essentially, Martin discovers that the volume of the observable universe that we live in is 3.6 times 10 to the 80 cubic meters, but the size of the universe that you would need, if I get this correctly, to store the library that Borges is requesting is 3 times 10 to the 1.8 million. Therefore,
pretty beefy.
10 to the 1.8. And I'm maybe I need to read this full number. It's 10 to the 1,834,094. Yeah, cubic meters. So
no biggie.
A lot of meters. Delicious. Martin ends his letter with our great slogan, keep on ifing. That's what we say. Best regards, Martin from Frankfurt, Germany. So thank you, Martin, for writing in. Thank you, Lars. Thank you, Bill, for writing in last week. And I thank all of you for writing in this week. If you haven't written in before.
Martin, for doing all that math.
Yeah, totally. Go to whattheif.com, click on contact, say hello. That's what people are doing. We'd love to hear from you. And by the way, a quick shout out again to our Patreon members. Thank you for supporting our small portion of the infinite library that we have built so far. It'd be a great fundraising campaign. Yeah. We need to build 10 to the 1.8 million cubic meters. Our building fund is growing very slowly indeed. This week, Gabby, you have brought a wonderful if ripped from the headlines, as we like to say. Where did I put that? Tell us, for those who don't know, what does it mean when we say we ripped the if from the headlines? What do those words mean? Longtime listeners like Martin know, but some may not.
Yeah, essentially, you know, we find science articles. You know, everybody on the show is either a scientist or an avid reader of science. And so whenever a new article comes out about something really cool that's just been discovered, we elect to sort of take that discovery and do some twist on it and run with it.
Indeed, indeed. And this week, one of our favorite sources of science news is Scientific American. And this week, they had an amazing story. This is a great. Whoever wrote the headline this week deserves extra kudos. This is the headline. This tiny fish makes an ear-blasting screech for love. And kudos to them for not waiting until Valentine's Day to serve up this fine story. The article continues, a rice grain size fish screams louder than a jackhammer, and we have a lot to learn from its minuscule brain. This is by Elizabeth Ann Brown. And again, we'll try to remember to post the link there in the show notes so you can go check out this article where you can see a cute, well, I also grabbed the picture there, a cute little picture of the fish, tiny fish. Elizabeth Ann Brown continues, in the streams of South Central Myanmar lives a creature that could easily be mistaken for a sentient grain of rice, a grain of rice that is with a lot to say and a voice like a jackhammer. Not many people get described as having a voice like a jackhammer. It's pretty good. At just 12 millimeters long, this transparent fish, Danionella cerebrum, is among the smallest vertebrates alive, but it may be the world's loudest animal by weight. Measured underwater and at close range, male calls reach an astonishing 140 decibels. That's as loud as a firecracker, says Verity Cook, a researcher at Charité Berlin University of Medicine, who studies brain activity during acoustic communication. To human ears above the water, the fish's call sounds like a chirp or a buzzy whine, and it can last more than a minute. Why does a tiny fish scream so loudly? Sometimes it seems it's a love song. I'll leave it on a cliffhanger there so you go read the article, which I encourage you to do. But this week, we are going to imagine, as we often do with animal stories, I think it's very fun, I think you agree, Gabby, to imagine ourselves as if, what if we had these traits? Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Would you like to imagine having an ear-blasting screech for love?
Just ear-blasting screech in general, I think. Just really appeals
for any
to
purpose.
Me.
Yeah. It's the most punk rock fish I think I can imagine. And so before I blast the klaxon of warning, and as we transition into the thought experiment, the universe in which we will safely contain this thought experiment, what safety protocols should people adhere to?
Oh, earplugs. 100% get earplugs and those, like, well, actually, maybe I shouldn't be telling people earplugs on an audio-only medium. But for the imagined sake of entering into this, like, jackhammer loudness universe, get some ear protection. Yeah.
Get some ear protection as we ask, what the if? We humans could make an ear-blasting screech for love or any other purposes. What if we could screech at 140 decibels? Oh my goodness. This is going to be a fun one. Also, the physical mechanism that allows the fish to do this is quite extraordinary, and adapting that to human form is going to be fascinating. So, Gabby, we wake is my favorite way to begin these thought experiments. We wake up in the morning, and we are like these fish. So, I think our first question is, sometimes we have to define, as we say, we have to define our terms or set the parameters for this experiment. So, are we tiny like these fish, or is it we're scaling it up to our size?
I think let's scale it up. Yeah,
scale it up. So you wake up in the morning, and do you screech right away? What's going to cause you to screech?
So, I mean, to be perfectly honest, we're not 100% sure with the fish yet either. We think it's a mating thing.
Right.
But
always a good guess. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. For me, as a New Yorker, I guess I'll be screeching if the subway's late. I will be screeching at the taxi that makes a turn really fast and almost takes me out in the crosswalk. All those sort of, I think, standard things are worthy of a bit of a yell.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting you mentioned the subway screech. Now, I don't know if a lot of people... There are a number of people in our audience who live in cities that may have subways. Not a lot of people, not a lot of cities do, but they do. And if they're in cities outside New York, and especially if they're in Europe, the subways aren't very loud. They're they operate very smoothly. And, you know, boy, like in Switzerland and in Germany, the trains, they're just like silent, you know, all the way. But in New York, the goddamn subway trains so loud.
It has screech. That little, it has its own little screech. But for me, it's just kind of nostalgic. Like, you know, when it's about stopping, like when you hear that noise, that tells you how fast you need to run to get there from the stairs.
to get to the door. Yeah, exactly. And as the trains come into the station, then they go, especially if they're going around a curved track, the thing is screeching like crazy. But you've probably all heard railroad cars screeching at, you know, coming across a crossing at a street or whatever. Well, I was just curious, and I looked up how loud is that screech when a train is coming around a turn. That screeching sound is 120 decibels.
So this fish is
less than the fish. The fish is 20 decibels higher than a screeching train. So
maybe we should start off a little bit talking about this fish.
Yeah. Go for it.
Because I feel like maybe we should cover some bases about this little thing, about why it's cool, about sort of maybe what it means if we are more like this thing.
Right.
So one, as I mentioned, it is real tiny. It is the size of a grain of rice. It has apparently one of the smallest known like vertebrate brains. So when that article like mentioned its minuscule brain, it was not just throwing shade on this fish for no reason whatsoever. It's actually apparently like known. It's got like a tiny little brain. It's got no skull. it's like super clear, which is why people have been studying it already, because apparently it's good for neuroscience. If you don't have to image through dark tissues, you can just look at directly what's happening in the brain, which is why people were originally studying it. But over the course of their time working with these little fish, they kept hearing noises from the tank and they couldn't figure out what they were. And eventually they're like, we think it's the fish. And so it turns out in like these tanks of these little rice-sized fish, there's like, it's only the males that make the noise and it's only some of the males. So it seems to be like some kind of like hierarchy where the ones that are making this noise are somehow like suppressing the noise making of the other ones. So there's probably some like interesting social hierarchy going on with these fish. But the whole thought, I guess, now about why this would have come up is that they're from really dark like environments. And so if you're a fish trying to signal to other fish of your species and they can't see you, what's the best way to get their attention? Making light might not really help because the water is still really dark. But you can make one hell of a noise and every other little fish that's your same species is going to have a pretty good idea of where you are. So that's kind of the idea behind why they probably make this noise. They're not the only fish that make noise. There are plenty of others, like the black drum fish also makes a noise. And they're louder, but they're also much, much bigger. Like the size to noise ratio for these little guys is like unprecedented.
Yeah. 140 decibels, and it's only 12 millimeters long. Like 12, just to help people understand even, what is 12? 12 millimeters is, I don't know, comparable to...
I mean, when they say a grain of rice, like, that's a pretty
accurate...
A grain
of rice, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, incredible. So we've scaled this up now, and that means that we humans have this thing. So what is the sound? How does the fish physically make this sound? Do they know that?
Yeah, they do. So interestingly, it's not the way that we make sound. So right now I'm talking to you, I'm passing air over my vocal cords and creating a sound. We've talked before about like language and whatever and how that's like actually a very difficult thing to do because there are entire specialized parts of our brain that are made up for controlling sound production and making these sounds. This sound, however, is pretty nonspecific. It's, think like a dog's bark. It's not like, there's not always like a gradation to what they're doing. They're just making this one singular loud as hell noise. It's an extremely high frequency noise. And what they make it by is that they have a really specialized, essentially body for this. So fish have something called a swim bladder. It kind of helps them control where they are in the water. If they didn't have that, they couldn't float themselves up to the top. Or if it was inflated all the time, they could never, you know, swim and sink down to the bottom. And so they're able to kind of control this by, I think, like flexing the muscles around it. And so because they have like a little sac that's essentially full of air, it kind of works a little bit like a drum. So they have this like a drumming cartilage, and then this dedicated muscle.
How does a sac full of air act like a drum? When I think of a drum, think of like a skin that you hit. Yeah.
Yeah, and underneath that skin is air. You need a resonance space basically for the noise. You could think a little bit of like a guitar almost. You know how like a guitar has the hole, it's hollow. If you plugged the entire guitar with cotton, it wouldn't sound the same. It's why for an electric guitar, you need an amp. Something needs to resonate the sound in order to get more out of it. So what these fish have is essentially a full internal body drum kit in order to make this work. So that's awesome. Not enough that they're just like hitting a really tight muscle or something like that. They also have the swim bladder that's like being used to resonate the sound. So what their drum kit is apparently this piece of cartilage that they're calling drumming cartilage, a specialized rib bone, which is kind of like your drumstick, I guess. And then this like dedicated muscle that's apparently like extremely low fatigue so that it can move as fast as it needs to. And so it's that whole drum kit basically like really accelerates like the drumming cartilage is what they call it. At like over 2000 G. to give you an idea of, God, that's so fast and like revolutions per minute. In terms of G as in gravity, the maximum G like a fighter jet can take is 9. 2000 G is like the speed at which we spin back bacteria to pellet it and like sediment stuff, because bacteria can take it because they're tiny. 2000 G, if a person was experiencing that, they would no longer be a person at the end of it.
Oh, wow. So, and it's inside you. Yeah. Insides. So yes, you're basically smacking a thing against your bladder. At 2000 times.
Or your lung,
times.
I guess. I'm not sure. Uh-huh. It has to be something even that better. Fills with air. Yeah. Okay. So either we suddenly have a specialized swim organ, or I guess we use our lungs. We're flexing some cartilage against some kind of internal gas-filled cavity. Super fast.
An image just came to mind, and I would love for you, if you could, imagine an episode of Star Trek. Choose your variety of Star Trek. Choose your series. But where a alien humanoid, because they're always, especially in the old Star Trek, always humanoids. Anyway, another humanoids that come, they appear to be totally normal. And they appear to look exactly like we do as humans. But they also have this thing. So can you imagine a scene where they meet the regular human crew and begin to demonstrate
I fully expect it's just totally like one of those things where it's so normal for them that they don't even mention it. Like at some point they have to get somebody back to the ship or whatever. And they're like, oh, he's out of radio range. Like, nuh-uh, I got it. And all of a sudden, takes a deep breath, closes their mouth, but produces the single loudest sound you've ever heard from like a special rib hammering against their lungs, which is, God, that's body horror for me, dog. But that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So suddenly the whole Enterprise crew, you know, puts their hands over their ears and has potentially gone deaf, at least temporarily.
And it probably fully sounds like he must have exploded or something. But whoever it is just sitting there perfectly normal and fine.
Yeah. Oh, you don't have this?
Sorry. Oh, you guys don't do this?
Right. So you woke up in the morning and you have this screech. And so maybe you just squeak just to wake up, you know, you just emit your screech. And you hear other people in the apartment building or on the street screeching as well, you know.
Or states away if we're scaling this up.
States away.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm scaling this.
Yeah.
You can keep going. I'll do my math in the background.
But live calculations are happening.
It would be, and I'm bad at math, so this tells you something that I really care about this. Okay. I have to find an equivalent for this, but if we're saying that per 1.2 millimeters of fish, you produce 140 decibels of sound. A 5'7" human is like somewhere around like 1700 millimeters, like 1740 or 1750 millimeters. By that same scale extension, the sound that we would make is over 20,000 decibels. And I've got to try to figure out what sound that's louder than, but I think that's like, that's that just like a bomb. I have no idea.
Yeah. Yeah. So the fun thing is what we actually automatically know is, and this is one of the things I love about these thought experiments, these ifs that we run, is that oftentimes they take dramatic things. It seems to be a relatively minor or a small change to our universe, but then suddenly huge ramifications come about. And so one thing we're realizing is that the materials that we have in our world have to be completely different. They have to be able to survive 20,000 decibel blasts of people just yawning.
Okay, Phil.
Yeah.
So to briefly talk about sound, to maybe acquaint
yes.
our listeners, there's hertz and there's decibels. Hertz mm-hmm. is a measure of sound frequency. So you can think of it as like high pitch, low pitch. Decibels is sound pressure. The loudest sound in the universe in decibels is 1,100 decibels, which is the eruption of a black hole.
Ah.
Or, you know, mergers of black holes. So we right, would right. be louder than that by scale.
20 times.
Purely by scale. Clearly, there must be a physical limitation that we're running into. So right. maybe this one doesn't scale, because I think the first time anybody made that noise, it would shatter reality as we know it.
Yeah. 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 Amazing. So I think what we can say is, for our experiment, we don't need to specify the exact amount, but we can say that it's enormous and it's deafening and it's enough to shatter materials, right? For sure. So we can't have, we don't have glasses and ceramic things in our house. I think everything is made of some sort of much more durable material to survive sound blasts, you know, not to mention our own selves. I think you'd have to know, even it would just be a matter of politeness, not to scream within, I don't know, a mile of somebody. You'd have to save it for particular, you know, situations, right? Because it isn't just a matter of deafening people. Like, the reason you go deaf, I'm sure, is essentially that your eardrum is destroyed by the pressure blast of the decibels, right? So, you know. Now, I am compelled to jump right to music, right? So there would definitely be, as there are these days in our normal world, bands that whose sole intention is to be as loud as possible, right? So, like,
you know, I think so.
Whoever the latest, greatest heavy metal band is, you know, or even, you know, there might be some hip hop groups that really, they're just trying to really blast it out. So they could call themselves, I don't know, the Mighty Swim Bladders, right? And they,
oh, delightful. A little weird, but
they
delightful.
Have a great song.
I appreciate it.
So, because the harmonies, I'm just trying to imagine that we don't know what. Like you said, what frequency is another thing. So what is the note? I think people would definitely learn to sing with this gigantic drum inside them. In other words, it would be an astounding tool for making sound, for making music.
Yeah, and maybe this is the thing that, like, most people don't exactly know, but, like, you can kind of tune drums based on the tightness of the skin.
Yeah.
So, like, in Capoeira, we have a drum called the Atabaki, and part of how you, like, tune it is, like, there's these big, like, wooden pegs that kind of hold down the edges of the skin. You can tighten the drum by, you know, hammering those further down. Similarly, heat can also be used to, like, you know, tune drums. So if this is an internal drum, maybe you have people with just, like, wicked good abs or something. Like, there's human beings would find some sort of, like, a muscle that they would work. So you could tell somebody does, I don't know, atomic screamo, which I assume is going to be the genre name of whatever this is, because they have one really specific, like, muscle group that is just, like, way too defined to do anything else.
Yeah, yeah. And at sporting events, either the people have to be auditoriums have to be gigantic, which I don't imagine them doing, because you still want to be close to the action. I was going to say to spread out the people so that they could scream together. In other words, everyone's shouting. Just like we mentioned quite a few episodes ago, how the fans stomping the ground together in tune with Taylor Swift, in tune with her music, created it could be measured on a seismograph in Seattle. And so again, the what was the name of your band?
Atomic Screamo.
Atomic Screamo. Everyone cheering, you know, just at one single, you know, somebody shoots an incredible basket from halfway down the court, and everybody screams together could completely melt the structure of the stadium. Not to mention everyone.
Yeah.
It'd be just suicidal. Dear.
Well, yeah. Also, God forbid you have somebody at the right frequency to shatter glass. So glass is,
right.
you need the right frequency, like a resonant frequency where the glass starts vibrating in the same way that the sound does. But you also need it at a certain volume. And so the volume that you need is 100 decibels or 105, but at the right frequency. Yeah. So there could be somebody out there who they just train to just shatter glass, which is a very unique sort of mayhem slash honestly superpower that I think we're working up to here. Or it just happens often enough that, like you said, we just avoid glass in this new society.
Right. Or it makes me think that, you know, opera could be very popular, right? Because you wouldn't have to go to the opera to hear it, because you could hear it throughout the entire city. If one, you know, if one opera singer is singing, you could just hear it. Maybe throughout the country. I don't know.
Well, I mean,
although sound does drop pretty rapidly. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking just like, is this, so for the fish, this is like a distinct vocalization. For us, are all of our vocalizations like this, or is this a separate one that we're doing? Because for the opera, you wouldn't be able to hear it unless all of a sudden they do this. They have a solo, which is just this noise, and that you hear.
Yeah, that's interesting. I would think, well, the interesting question is, if you evolved with this already in you, would you also develop something as puny as vocal cords? You know, and it's possible you would, actually, because I think what this does point out is that this mechanism, this screaming mechanism, is only good for extremely long distance communication or destructive forces or things like that. So I could imagine you have both. And that leads me to, I think we have to go with this. I find it fascinating that remember the original headline was, "This tiny fish makes an ear-blasting screech for love." And I was reading in the article there, it basically, they woo each other with these screams. Mostly, now they think it would be male decerebrum fish making these spectacular sounds, telling females that they are there. And perhaps, perhaps there's information about the traits of the male encoded in the sound. You know, I guess they could hear that sound and be like, oh, that's a tough guy, you know, or he's got
a great tone. There's definitely some information there, and the fact that only some of the males in the tank will make the noise.
So if there
is some type of hierarchy in who gets to scream, there is.
Right.
I think that's neat.
That makes sense, because just like among humans, not everyone has the guts to do it. The gut, literally.
Yeah, quite literally in this case. Ugh, body horror.
Yeah. So let's say, Gabby, you're going to, you're going to woo somebody with your screaming. How are you going to do it? What are you going to have to do?
I'm guessing that, like, instead of, like, there's no need for Tinder, right? Now, because
the dating,
like, this is just, like, people talk about dating in New York, it's super hard. I just assume now that people are just going to go outside and then just make this noise. as it's just like, you know, the beat.
Well, you could do it on TikTok, you know.
Yeah. You wouldn't even need to. You could hear somebody recording that TikTok from like two states away. This is a very much like, you make this noise, beacons are lit, Gondor calls for love. Like, it's like people are gonna know, like, that you're on the market. So I feel like now, like, there's a whole category of things that just, like, don't need to exist, because you just walk outside and make an ear-shatteringly loud noise and be like, oh, eligible bachelor, he's on.
Now that's kind of romantic, I must say. Imagine you're sitting at home, you know, one night, and you hear somebody calling for you from, like, you know, 60 miles away.
Here, I was just thinking midtown.
Then you'd have to say, though, you'd also say, well, it's a double-edged sword, because, wow, I really like the tone of their voice there. I'm really drawn to that. On the other hand, clearly they're geographically undesirable, because their tone is not deafening. So you really want someone who's close, so you don't have to travel far. You know, it's a tough relationship when it's
Yeah.
Long distance.
60 miles, long distance.
60 miles, yes. Yeah.
So I don't know if we should go down this path, but it is interesting to me that, because so the way that this seems to be, I guess, a relevant thing for this little fish, right? Is because it is a tiny little thing in a vast world of very, very dark water, and it needs to find other little tiny translucent fish. Because also, too, I don't know if we really mentioned this, these guys are like entirely see-through. So it's not like they have any big flash colors. They're like deeply unnoticeable, especially in dark water.
Right, right.
So human beings, though, we are very social, and we live in an environment where we can see each other easily. You know, air is not dark. We can see through it and can see each other over, like, you know, reasonable distances. These fish could be like, you know, 10 body lengths away from each other and not know, versus us, where, you know, if a person's 20, 30 feet away, you can, in an open field, you can see them. So we wouldn't have the need to develop something like this unless this whole, you know, society of extremely loud, screamy people exists like deep underground or somewhere where, like, for some reason they just can't see each other most of the time.
Yeah, that'd be wild. And I love the idea that, you know, you think you're alone in some dark space, and all of a sudden somebody screams right next to you. Oh,
right next to
Bob,
you.
I didn't see you. There.
Should have made some other noise.
Yeah.
This reminds me of, too, this is very much a like a My Family inside joke for years. There's a cartoon character, Vavoom. And there's like a scene where Vavoom literally like blasts a hole. It's from Felix the Cat. Like he like blasts a hole through a mountain because his whole thing is he's so loud. He just like says Vavoom. And it literally like that sonic blast is so loud. And there's a scene where he just like, you know, they come up on like a mountain and he just blasts a tunnel through it by saying Vavoom. And this has been, of course, a longstanding inside joke in my family because both my mother and myself are extremely loud people. Just on a natural speaking voice tone. So my dad has been calling my mom at least Vavoom for years, based on the fact that she has an acoustic sonic blast ability. So it is very amusing to me that this entire episode is an entire world of Vavooms.
That's pretty good. A world of Vavooms. How does this, as we come towards the end of this experiment, where does this lead to? You hit the gas on this experiment. You extrapolate all the way out.
I am actually kind of struggling with that one. I think it's really interesting the way that it doesn't necessarily change our need for complex communication. So, for example, things like phones might continue to exist. If this is exclusively a mating call, it probably rules out Tinder. Etc. Where again, you just have people standing out on street corners, blasting the sound at each other. Definitely, I could see it being like a cultural thing. Like we said, people training themselves to shatter glass, etc., etc. And I also wonder if, you know, it might result in us being kind of like less sensitive to noise, or generally living further away, either because we are a society that lived further away, you know, a species that has always lived further away from each other, thus necessitating us developing this noise to begin with, or because we're all blasting each other's eardrums out as we try to make a society, and we just can't do this anymore and have to live further away from each other.
I love the idea of the Vavoom, and I can imagine you know, some civilization realizing that they can team together, put together, like, you know, just like the Egyptians discovered, hey, if we throw enough guys at, if we pull enough guys together, we can build enormous rock mountains, you know, pyramids. And it could be that it's another civilization, like talking about, you said a Vavoom, he could make a tunnel with his voice. I can imagine a civilization pulling together, you know, 1,000 people who then just agree to scream, you know, and build tunnels that way. Or do all kinds of things, you know. Not to mention, of course, destructive as well as constructive power with the unifying all their screaming together.
I'm actually imagining an even further logical scenario, which is, you know, the aliens finally come down and they quite literally get yelled off the planet.
Yeah.
Just because.
Yeah.
Like, Independence Day would be very different if we could all just make a noise louder than the explosion of the universe. They might leave these guys alone. Be like, oh my God.
You could probably literally push the mothership back.
Yeah.
They're screaming. Yeah.
And this is the thing, maybe we should ask Matt about, like, how much sound energy it takes to, like, boil air. There's like a mantis shrimp, which I love. They're really great. Google them if you don't know anything about them. They're like brightly colored and they move and punch the water so fast it like A, creates a sonic shock, but also B, like slightly boils the water in front of them. And I'm wondering, there's got to be a point at which that happens for these guys. I don't know what it is. I don't know how much sound energy it takes, but it could be entirely boil away our atmosphere if enough people screamed at once. Me, I think, dialing it up past 11 to 12.
Yeah, exactly. All the way to 12, maybe even 12.5. it makes me think, I think the moral of the story is that humans would, you know, we're already pretty powerful just by ourselves. But like, I'm kind of intrigued by this idea that we would have something that's so ridiculously powerful. You would actually learn, I think, to moderate it, and you would have enormous capabilities, right? The amount of range you could have. So I think we would learn to be quiet and stuff like that. And those who do screech, you know, would be put in jail or were banished, you know, from the society.
Some soundless room.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thank you to Elizabeth Ann Brown, the reporter at Scientific American, who wrote this fabulous story. I encourage all of you to go check it out. It's from April 16th, 2024. This tiny fish makes an ear-blasting screech for love. Maybe we'll revisit this with Matt on Valentine's Day. That would be kind of fun. Gabby, do you have anything you want to plug?
I think I've talked about it a couple of times, but some of my work is appearing in an upcoming short fiction anthology, which I think should be released sometime around November, so still a bit of a ways to go. But the anthology is called The Map of Lost Places. It is a horror anthology, but I wrote a sci-fi horror. So really appreciate it if you guys check it out. It means a lot, and I hope you enjoy it.
Yeah. So what do they look up?
The Map of Lost Places is the anthology.
Right.
Should have somewhere around like 20 or 25 stories. So it's a decent sized anthology of short horror fiction.
Fantastic. And can you give any tease? Do you have like a tagline, a little log line for your story? Your story that'll be in that.
Yeah. Neuromancer meets digital archaeology meets horror is, I think, the best tagline I have.
Very cool. I don't know if Matt has anything to plug, but I can plug that Matt will be back. Matt will not be back next week. Neither will you next week.
Next
I'm not
week,
sure what
I
the
will
episode
be perhaps supremely hungover. It's the day after I defend my thesis. I think it's probably better for all of us if you guys don't hear me talk next week, attempt to talk at 8:45 in the morning next week.
You'll be resting your 20,000 decibel screech.
Oh, of course, yeah.
After the rager. The rager that's going to happen after you become PhD, become doctor, Dr. Gabby. So, yes, congratulations in advance, by the way, to you for that. Ooh. We will celebrate with you next week. That's going to be very exciting. Listeners, write in. Go to whattheif.com and click contact. If you're a Patreon member, of course, as you know, you can contact us via the Patreon app. Patreon supporters are entitled and have been enjoying to listen to extended episodes only for Patreon supporters. If you want to find out what those are, they're super fun. And man, we've done a ton of them by now. So when you join Patreon, by the way, speaking of those of you who are completists who like to catch up on lots of other episodes, there's an enormous amount of material awaiting you, all the bonus content at patreon.com/whattheif. And so if you join right now, you could go listen to as many of those as you want from the past, as well as the new one that will be coming up today. So thank you to all our Patreon supporters for supporting us. It's enormously helpful, and we appreciate it. Gabby, will you help us now prepare to transition back with the safety, you know, protocols, as always, in effect?
Yeah. So as we are sitting in this new world with our earplugs in and our big, like, noise-canceling headphones over top of them, and the sound is still getting in, we can't help but shout the name of the show.
At 20,000 decibels.
What?
The
Thank you all for listening. Thank you for shouting. If you're listening, wherever you are in the world, shout so you can hear yourself among all the What the If listeners around the world. Shout out to Lars in Sweden, Martin in Berlin, Bill in Winchester, Virginia, and to all our friends in Australia, Denver, Texas, all over the United States and the globe. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.